بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا
اللهم صل على محمد
By the grace of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, to Him all thanks and gratitude belongs. By default, we all possess that great blessing in us for which Ma'soom says that we all have been created with the leftover clay with which Ma'soomeen were created. Now when we get to these majalis, to these gatherings, many a times you find that no one has recited anything, no one has uttered any word, but just looking at these black banners and the black clothes which mu'mineen are wearing, you just burst into tears. For that, Ma'soom says that Shi'atuna qad khuliqu min fadli tinatina wa ujinu bi nur al-wilaya, that our Shias, they have been made, they have been created with the leftover clay with which Ma'soomeen were created. And that clay was mixed with that noor of wilaya. So that is the connection that we have, with Ma'soomeen, that in their grief, in their sorrow, we are unhappy, and in their joys that we are happy. So that is by default given to us, but we have to try and enhance that great blessing in us, and that is by observing the adab, the etiquettes of how we should be present in a majlis, and in a majlis which is held for Aba Abdullah, we have to come with a mindset of ma'rifah. What is that mindset? That we are heading off to a majlis wherein we will sit and learn, we will sit and cry. A majlis wherein riwayat say that Hazrat Zahra alayha salam is present. A majlis wherein, if we couldn't understand and we couldn't make out what is being recited and why mu'mineen are crying, riwayat says that man baka abka aw tabaka, that who cries or makes other cries or resembles those who cry for Aba Abdullah, wajabat lahul jannah, jannah will be made mandatory on him. And come to a majlis with a mindset that we are being seated on the wings, on the feathers of the angels. That is what riwayat says. So with that mindset, if we come, we can benefit a lot with that default settings that we have, that the creation is as such. If we enhance all of these settings, a better service will be provided. It was mentioned yesterday regarding Hur alayhi salam, that the beauty which existed in him, which resulted in him ending up as one of the best in this creation of Allah, was that adab, that etiquette which he possessed, as a result of which he is remembered today as one of the best. That adab. So we have to look into ourselves, or this adab has to be present in us. If God forbid we are grumpy, if God forbid we don't possess that good akhlaq, that etiquette, good ethics, or if we are, God forbid, ill-mannered, we have to correct ourselves. Many a times when these issues are being mentioned, we look into other people, other mu'mineen. Or for example, when we talk about death, we understand it, but death for others, not for our own selves. Or when these negative things are mentioned, it's only others that come to our mind. But that is not the case. When these things are being mentioned, first of all, it is being mentioned for myself and to you brothers and sisters, just a reminding. Now, the sins that we commit in this world, they give birth to new diseases. May they be diseases in our spiritual side, in our moralities, or may they be these diseases that we have that pop up every now and then. Now, all these new diseases, they are a result of the sins that we commit. Many a times, if we look into ourselves, we are a mu'min and at the same time a kafir. Whence the teaching is that we have to be totally submitted. Whatever has been taught to us, that has to be practiced. Sometimes we find that when it comes to prayers, we are good mu'mineen. When it comes to other issues, we don't accept. When it comes to fast, for example, we observe the fasts very good, Hajj, etc. But when it comes to Khums and Zakat, it's lacking. So, on a side, we are a good mu'min, on the other side, we are not. Whence this is not acceptable. A mu'min is a mu'min, or he is not. There is no midway out. We can't say that we will be with Ali, we will say the prayers behind him, we'll have our meal and lunch with Muawiyah because he has a colorful table. It doesn't work that way. It has to be either this way or that way. There is no midway. The other thing that was mentioned yesterday regarding Hur was the adab, the etiquette which he possesses, as a result of which he ended up in the highest peaks and the levels of heaven. And also it was mentioned about tolerance, that if we could tolerate each other, it would be easier to tolerate the Imam. Now this tolerance, alaykum salam, when it comes, it starts from our own homes, spouses tolerating each other, husbands tolerating wives, wives tolerating husbands, children tolerating their parents, and the other side of it. And again, the same thing, it's with mu'mineen tolerating each other. Or when it comes to family affairs, family lives, you've got these midlife crises, you've got early life crises, you've got newly wedded couples, they've got crises, you've got abuses, child abuses, what and all these different definitions that have come up. And if you analyze each one of them, it is that tolerance which is lacking nowadays. Because of that, God forbid, divorce, talaq, which is kept as a remedy, as a cure in the last stages, and it is one of those halals which is hated the most, that is taken as the first step, as the first cure, which shouldn't be the case. And the reason behind that, it's this tolerance which is lacking. Again, if you look into the teachings that we have, if we can't tolerate each other, then definitely we will never be able to tolerate the Imam when he comes. Because the teachings that we have, it says that if I respect you, or if you respect me, before you have respected me, or before I have respected you, we have respected the Imam of time. Why? Because each one of us is a franchise of that same Imam. Each one of us is a branch of that Imam. So if I respected you, I've respected him first and then I've respected you. So that is how it works. If a husband is good to the wife, if the wife is good to the husband, it is as if he is first good to the Imam and then he is good to the spouse. If there are shortcomings in family lives, if there are shortcomings in the husband, in the wife, they have to be topped up. They have to be waived, they have to be corrected. Not that we take the first step as the cure and just split and get away from each other. That is not accepted. So, one of the issues to which we have to give a lot of importance is manners. Sometimes we calculated this way, that if a husband is ill-mannered to the wife, or if the wife is ill-mannered to the husband, it's only that akhlaq of being ill-mannered or being grumpy which exists, whence the reality is not as such. By that being ill-mannered, there is a bunch, there is a package of different sins that come across with that one bad akhlaqi, with that one being ill-mannered. In a hadith, the Holy Prophet, he says that min sa'adati al-mar' husnul khulq, that the prosperity of a man is being well-mannered, and his wretchedness is in him being ill-mannered. Now the effects of a person when he is ill-mannered, says Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, that says that many a times a respectful becomes humiliated, and many a times you find that a dhalil, a person who is humiliated, he becomes aziz, and that is by that manners. If he possesses those manners, if he is dhalil, he will become aziz, and if he is aziz, by not possessing it, he will become dhalil. In the books of akhlaq, or in the ahadith that we have, there is a chapter called Babu Habt al-Amal. Habt in Arabic means to shed. Amal means actions. That is, sometimes it so happens that by doing something, whatever we have collected throughout our life, it just sheds away, it washes away. That is Habt al-Amal. And if we get some time, I'll list what are these actions which result in Habt al-Amal. Over here says that by being ill-mannered in a family life, may that be the husband or the wife, it results in Habt al-Amal. That is, whatever a person has collected throughout his lifetime, it just washes away, which is a huge big loss, which is a disaster. Imam says that إِنَّ سُوءَ الْخَلْقِ لَيَفْسُدَ الْعَمَلِ كَمَا يَفْسُدُ الْخَلْقَ الْعَسَلِ, that like vinegar which ruins honey, being ill-mannered, that too ruins and destroys all of your actions. Now that is sustaining a huge big loss, that after working for so many years, 30, 40, 50 years, collecting all these amal, painstaking efforts, prayers, fasts, hajj, zakat, etc., and all of a sudden we lose everything just for being ill-mannered, just for not tolerating each other. When it comes to being ill-mannered, it is not only that the husband or the wife or the children towards their parents, they are ill-mannered by being bad akhlaq or not possessing those ethics. It was mentioned that it is a whole big package of evil which comes with it. Masoom says that one who is ill-mannered, he will be counted low in the community. By his ill character, he creates fright in his place of work, in his workplace. By him being ill-mannered at home, he creates that fright within the family. The children, they are scared. The wife, she is scared. Or the wife, it may be the other way around. By creating that scare and that fright in a house, it's like these plants that grow without sufficient light, without sufficient heat, without sufficient water. And you found that this plant which should be healthy, it's not healthy anymore. So the first target of this being, of a person being ill-mannered, it's the kids, they are the ones who suffer. Now children, when they suffer, they will not be the right ones. When they grow, again, they will not be the perfect kids. Now the whole idea is that we pray that Allah make it as such that our children, they are enlisted among the best servants, among the best Muslims. When the initial stages are not right, when we don't give that right heat and light and sustenance to them, then how do we expect them to be good? So the whole family collapses by a person being ill-mannered. I have quoted this before, but as a reminder, but many a times things that are reminded, they have more weight in them. Or sometimes maybe we haven't understood it better then, we understand better now. But how this whole thing works, that the idea is that we correct ourselves, elevate ourselves, so that the distance between us and Allah reduces, and that we come closer to Allah. Among the great ulama today is Ayatullah Shaykh Hasan Zadeh Amali. You must have heard his name. He, during his young age, when he was studying in Qom, because of the heat in summer, ulama, they travel all the way away from Qom to cooler places. Now he also goes to Amul, where he comes from, which is a cooler place. And the same study circle which existed in Qom is over there. And during the day after his studies, when he comes to have a little nap, the children, they start shouting, playing in the house. And this person who is so tired, he just gets up, and his tone changes with the children. Now when I say his tone changes, to his caliber, because he is a very delicate, a gentle person. After that, he is upset that why was I sharp on my kids, whence it wasn't their fault, they were playing at home. I was tired, I couldn't rest, and I told them off. Now, he says that I've broken these hearts. To patch up, he goes and buys some candies, some sweets, but again he is not at ease. He says, I've broken a heart, it doesn't get corrected with just these candies and sweets. Says, there is something wrong in me. Travels all the way from Amul to Tabriz, which is about 2,000 kilometers, to his Ustad. That why was this, that my attitude changed. Now these are great people. Now the great people, when they come to great and high ranks, it's not just out of the blue, that it's not drive-through. There's a hard work behind it. When he comes to his Ustad to ask for the reason of why this has happened to him, before he could say anything, Ustad says that from Barzakh, his Ustad, Marhum Ayatullah Qazi Tabatabai, who has passed away 40 years before that time, he has a communication with his student, to have a communication with his student, that he wants to serve Imam Al-Asr with this attitude. Now we want to serve Imam Al-Asr. Now with that trash that exists in us, how can we serve him? Now all this is, I'm addressing to myself, talking to myself, to you, just a reminder. And then he was writing this note to his brother, who is Marhum Ayatullah Muhammad Hussain Tabatabai, regarding you. I was writing this note and you came here. So there is a connection from Barzakh to this world and from this world, between all these different franchises, between all these different branches. So we have to correct ourselves if we, God forbid, are ill-mannered, or we swear at our children, at our wives, that disease has to be put aside. And inshallah, if I get some time, this will continue. As a result of this, salawat. Person being ill-mannered, love, it vanishes from this home. Children, they are scared of the parents, so love never rules. When love rules in a household, in a family life, you find that everything is healthy, everything is surrounded with beauty and goodness. With that person being ill-mannered, another disease or another sin which is committed by him is that he is afflicted with pride, takabbur. Starts swearing at each other, starts swearing at the children, and all these other sins which come as one package. Takabbur, it's that greatest sin which Allah hates. And as a result of that takabbur, whatever he has sought is lost. The same thing, it's with these swear words, swear languages, which come as a package of that being ill-mannered, as a result of which the whole thing collapses, the whole family is destroyed, and everything is ruined. So we have to tolerate each other in order to be able to tolerate the Imam. If we could tolerate our wives, the wives could tolerate their husbands, not just switch to the first step as splitting from each other or as a divorce, which is the last resort that has been kept, that would be the best idea. Now, although these things are simple to be said, it's tough. Sometimes the situations are really tough, but they can be corrected. And again, the other thing to be borne in mind is that the first spouse is that first spouse. No matter how many times a person does get married, he may switch, he may get better spouses, but that first one is the first one. No one can take the place of that first one. No matter how bad he or she is, the first one is the first one. Now, this is again something which those who have experienced will also witness. A person comes to Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wa salam. And he asks the Imam, says that a true person waiting for the Imam, is there any instruction for him, Imam? Imam says yes. He teaches him a dua. Says, recite this dua as much as you can. What is that? Says, Allahumma arrifni nafsak. Innaka in lam tu'arrifni nafsak, lam a'rif rasulak. Says that, O God, make it as such that you are known to me. That if you are known to me, your prophet will be known to me. And if you don't make yourself known to me, your prophet will be unknown to me. And then continues that, Allahumma arrifni rasulak, fa innaka in lam tu'arrifni rasulak, lam a'rif hujjatak. That if your prophet wasn't known to me, your hujjah, your argument, the Imam will be unknown to me. And then says, O Allah, make that argument, that Imam, that hujjah known to me. And if that is unknown to me, dhalaltu an deeni, I will be misled. So, Allah should be known, Rasul should be known, hujjah, the Imam has to be known. And if they are all known, a person will be guided. If either of them or all of them are unknown, a person will be misled. So, what is being mentioned over here by the Imam is that we have to know the Imam. Knowing the Imam, not just the ID, seeing his passport, no. Knowing the Imam in detail. If we don't know, read, ask. If there are doubts, clear them. Now, these doubts that come up into our minds every now and then, they have to be corrected. It is an obligation upon us. It is wajib that we must correct these and remove these doubts. And if these doubts are not removed, that will be another disaster. So, Imam has to be known. The events that will unfold before the arrival of the Imam, we should know them so that it's easier for us. So, Imam over here says, Arrifni, Arrifni. If you look back into history during the time of Amirul Mu'mineen, there were people who knew the Imam and they gave these strong slogans saying that Anta waliyuna, Anta imamuna, Anta khalifatuna, that Imam, you are our wali, you are our Imam, you are our khalifa. But the time came that these people who gave these strong, hard slogans switched, moved away. So that was again another disaster, that someone who was with him did not remain with him. So over here Imam teaches that God make it as such that I know Allah, I know Rasul, I know his Imam, so that I stick and stay with them and remain with them. Now may that be the first Imam, may that be the last Imam, all of them, they are one Noor. If we could tolerate the first one, we can definitely tolerate the last one, because the attitude of all of them is the same. The judgment of all of them are the same. During the time of the second Khalifa, there was a debate as to who should succeed him. He says, after me, Take these six people and lock them in a room. Who are these six people? Talha, Zubair, Abdul Rahman bin Auf, Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, Usman and Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. Take them and lock them in a room. And says that they will decide who the successor will be after him. And then says that they will give a vote. If the vote is draw, if three of them give a vote to one of them and three others give a vote to another, then I have appointed Abdul Rahman bin Auf. He has a vote from me, and whoever Abdul Rahman bin Auf extends his allegiance or votes for, he will be the next Khalifa. So that was something which was decided by the second Khalifa. And it so happens that after him, they bring these six people, shut them in the room, and then it is a draw. Three votes were given to one of them, three votes were given to the other. Now when it is a draw, the instructions of the second Khalifa were that you go to Abdul Rahman bin Auf and see who he is going to vote for. Abdul Rahman bin Auf stands, comes to Amir al-Mu'mineen, extends his hands and says that I want to extend my allegiance to you, Ali, in accordance to the teachings of God, in accordance to the teachings of the Prophet, and in accordance to the teachings of Shaykhain, that is the first and the second Khalifa. Amir al-Mu'mini, he quickly takes his hands away. He says that if you want to extend your allegiance to me, and if you want me to be the Khalifa, I will judge, I will rule in accordance to the teachings of God, in accordance to the teachings of the Prophet, and in accordance to my teachings, not the Shaykhain. So this was tough. Although that allegiance was given to him and he could have become the Khalifa, he did not accept. People, they came and objected that, Ali, why did you do that? Opportunity was given to you. You were the Khalifa, you were the ruler. Imam in reply says that a Khilafat, a rule whose basis is not right, I will never accept. From the first moment, it has to be correct, it has to be right. Only then can that Khalifa rule and judge. So this attitude of Imam was tough. Not everyone accepted. So tolerating that attitude of Imam was difficult. Or for example, yesterday, that example was mentioned regarding Prophet Dawood, which he used to judge based upon Wahy. So in their judgments, that is Ma'sumeen and the Prophets, they don't just see what is happening in front of us in that courtroom. When they judge, they take into consideration all the generations that have gone and all the generations that will come. And that is what we see in the battles that were fought by Ma'sumeen. May that be Karbala, may that be the battles fought by Amir al-Mu'mineen. People, they used to come and object that, Ya Ali, why didn't you kill that person? He was just below your sword. He says there is a difference between me slicing these people and you. When I kill someone, I scan and see if there is any mu'min who will come into existence from the generations after him. If there is even one person who will be born, no matter how many generations after that, for that one person, I will let this one go. That is how they judge. So tolerating this attitude, it's tough. Or for example, when Abu Bakr became the Khalifa, Umar came and said to Amir al-Mu'mineen that, do you know why people did not choose you as the Khalifa? Imam says, why? Umar says that because you are straightforward, you are blunt. That is the reason why people did not accept you. And then he says that, do you know what? You have to be very political when you talk to people. When you talk to them, have these words in your mouth, chew them, come up with nice words, and slowly, gradually tell these things to people. When he was talking to Amir al-Mu'mineen like that, all of a sudden Imam Ali brings his fist in front of his face and says, Umar, how many are there? He says, there are five. He says, why did you say that so quickly? You should have waited, used the words, play with the words, and slowly, gradually say, there are five. He said, I know it's five, I don't need to think. Imam Ali says, for me also everything is evident, the knowledge which I possess, it's evident, I don't need to think, everything is blunt and bright before me, and that is how I say. So the knowledge which they possess, It's ilm huzuri. They don't need to acquire. Everything is present before them. So this attitude of the imam, it's tough. Or for example, a person comes to the Prophet and he says that, Ya Rasulullah. People say that you are the Prophet. People say that you have a miracle, and that miracle is this book, Quran. He says, but Ya Rasulullah, I am an illiterate person. I'm not educated. I cannot read. I cannot write. No matter how much you say that this book is a miracle, for me, it means nothing. I can't understand what miracle is that in this book. And then says, Ya Rasulullah, can you show me those regular miracles which the other prophets used to show? Like changing of that stick into a snake, like opening of the seas, or dead being given life, or people who are ill being cured. I want one of these normal, regular miracles. Rasulullah says, whichever miracle from whichever prophet you want, I can do it. And then he says, okay, from this mountain, can you get me a camel? He says, yes. Comes to the mountain and says, I want a red camel. And that Rasulullah comes and says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And from that mountain emerged a camel. He sees it, he's happy. And then says, can you get me another one? He says, okay, another one. Says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Another camel comes out, emerges from those mountains. And then he says, Ya Rasulullah, can you get me four more, but not now? Let me have a test drive with these and let me go back to my town where I've come from. I'll inform the people about these camels, and then this person becomes the propagator of Rasulullah, of his risalat. Comes to his town with these brand new camels, and then he informs them and comes back to collect the four others. When he comes here, Rasulullah has passed away, and Abu Bakr has become the Khalifa. Comes to Abu Bakr and says that, your Prophet, he owes me four camels. I've come to collect them. They say that he has passed away. Say, who his successor? Says, I am his successor. Okay, if you are the successor, you have to give me those camels. He says, now if I accept, I'm in trouble. Says, okay, give him a few of these regular camels. He says, no, these regular camels, I can give you 100 of them. I want these red ones. He has no reply. And it is as such that in these hot spots, wherein people used to come to have their problems solved, one of the followers of Amir al-Mu'mineen, like Salman, like Abu Zar, they used to be present. And in these meetings, Salman was present over there. And whenever they got stuck, they used to say that, Alayka bi Abul Hasan, that you have to go and see Abul Hasan, that is Amir al-Mu'mineen. Salman brings this person to Amir al-Mu'mineen. And when this miracle took place, when those two camels emerged from the mountains, Amir al-Mu'mineen also was present over there. Now then, he was a young lad, about 32 years of age. Comes and says that, Rasulullah, he owes me four camels. He gave me two. He had promised to give me four more. He says, okay. Exactly as Rasulullah did. He comes to the same spot. Says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. One, two, three, four camels emerge. And he is pleased and happy. So, all of these miracles, which all of the prophets possessed, Rasulullah possesses. All of them, the imams, they possess. And even today, the imam of time, he possesses all of these miracles.
Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala
Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So, another salwa.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
So tolerating the judgments, the rulings of Ma'asumeen, it's tough. The same thing is with the Imam of time. But we have to train ourselves in a way that if he comes today, it is easier for us. We have a formula in philosophy which says that النهايات ترجع إلى البدايات. نهايات means the end results. بدايات means the initial thoughts that we have. For example, you want to hold this majlis over here. You have to have these initial thinkings and thoughts, a plan that a majlis is to be held. And what we find today that this majlis has been organized, has been held, is those end results. When it comes to having iman, having faith in imam, having faith in Allah, we have to have that mindset first, that we have to have that initial understanding about imamat in our minds first. And when the imam comes, that is what these are the end results. So that is what we find in this dua that was taught by our sixth imam, that Allahumma arrifni nafsak. Allah, make it as such that I know you, I know your prophet, I know your imam. And if I don't know any of these three or all of these three, walaltu an dini, I will be misled. So tolerating the judgments, tolerating the rulings of Ma'asumeen, it's tough. During the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, Rasulullah, there is a dispute between Rasulullah and a Jew. Rasulullah, he comes and buys an armor from this Jew. But the next day he pays. The next day this Jew comes and objects, says that I sold you an armor, you did not pay me. Rasulullah says, yes, I did buy that armor from you, I paid you the next day. He says, no, you haven't. There is a dispute between the Prophet and this Jew who has sold him this armor. A person was passing by. He says, can you stop? Can you help us? He says, yes, Ya Rasulullah. What is that I can do? Says, can you judge between us? I bought an armor from him, I paid him. He says, you haven't paid. Then he says, Rasulullah, do you have a witness? He says, no. Do you have a receipt? He says, no, but I have paid him. He gives out a ruling, a judgment. This person, what is that? Al-bayyinatu lil-mudda'i wal-yameenu ala man ankar. That if you don't have a witness, if you don't have a receipt, then you have to swear an oath. That is, the other person has to swear an oath. He says, I'm ready to swear not one, 100 oaths that he hasn't paid me. Rasulullah says, no, this judgment wasn't right. There, Amirul Mu'mineen was passing by. Says, Ya Ali, can you stop for a while? He says, yes, Ya Rasulullah, what is it? Says, there is a dispute between us. I want you to solve it. Says, what is it? Says, I bought this armor from him, I paid him the next day. He says, I haven't paid him. You judge. Imam Ali takes his sword out, beheads him there and then. People, they start saying that, what was this judgment? Why did he behead him here? And the Rasulullah says, Ali, explain. You should explain to them. Then Amirul Mu'mineen says, Ya Rasulullah, you brought forth this word of Allah. You said we have to offer prayers, 4 rakats for Zohr, 4 for Asr, morning, afternoon, evening, all and what not. Did we ask you for a witness? No, we blindly accepted. You said this is the word of God, we blindly accepted. Now that when you say that you've paid, why do we not blindly accept you? Rasulullah says, that is the ruling, that is the judgment. So tolerating this attitude of Amirul Mu'mineen was tough. The same thing is with the Imam of time. Tolerating the judgments, the rulings, it is tough. But if we train ourselves from today, that is in this time that we are living in, riwayat, they say that the arrival of the Imam will be delayed so much so that these Mu'mineen, they are trained, they become stronger, so that when the Imam comes, it's easier for them to accept him. So in a way, it's a blessing for us. But it doesn't mean that we just have to forget everything. We ask Allah to hasten the reappearance. We ask Allah to make us stronger, to make us make everything known to us so that it's simpler, it's easier for us to understand. That is, Allahumma arrifni nafsak, Allahumma arrifni rasulak, Allahumma arrifni hujjatak, fa'innaka in lam tu'arrifni hujjatak, valaltu an deeni. Marhum Ayatullah Haj Mirza Hashim Khurasani, one of the great ulama who passed away about 80 years ago, quotes from a book, Muntakabut Tawarikh, says that a person, a noble alim named Janab Agha Sayyid Ibrahim Dameshqi, he has three daughters, a sincere, trustworthy alim living in Sham. The eldest daughter, she has a dream, that is, Hazrat Ruqayya says that, tell your father that there is water in my grave, to come and fix it, inform the mayor to fix this grave. She comes and reveals the dream to the father. The father, he takes no notice of it. The second day, the second daughter has the same dream. She comes and says to the father, again he doesn't take any notice. The third day, the youngest daughter has exactly the same dream. Hazrat Ruqayya comes, says that, tell your dad to come and fix my grave, there is water in my grave. He takes no notice. The fourth day, she is sharp. Now it's in the dream of the father himself. It's 3 days I've been telling you to come and fix my grave. There is water and it's hurting me. He comes to the mayor and says that this is what has happened. He informs that the best of the ulama here, they perform a ghusl, wear clean clothes, come to the shrine of Hazrat Ruqayya alayha salam, and there, with whoever's hand the locks of the shrine opens, he enters and he opens, digs the grave, brings the body out so that the grave is fixed. All of them try and the door opens only with this Sayyid's hands. All of them try to dig the grave with the pick. It doesn't work, only with the Sayyid. When he hits the grave with the pick, it opens. When that happens, he is given the opportunity. He opens the grave and sees the body as if it has just been buried. Body of this young toddler of Aba Abdullah. Says the kafan was intact, the body was intact. Brings the body out of the grave and with utmost respect places it on his lap as if he sits in tashahhud. Says for 3 days he sat with the body of this little toddler of Aba Abdullah in his lap until the grave is fixed. He says that it was only for the time of Salat that I placed this body on a clean surface. And it was as such as a miracle that for these 3 days he didn't need to renew his wuzu. Says all these 3 days the toddler was in my laps and I cried and cried for her. Says that when the grave was ready and I wanted to bury the grave, he prays that and asks Allah to bless him with a son. And a son was blessed him, who he named Sayyid Mustafa. Says that as a result of holding that body, that toddler of Aba Abdullah, for 3 days in his laps, he was blessed with this karamat, that whoever was bit by one of these poisonous creatures, he gave them shifa by just touching them. And that transferred to his son, to his grandson, and the same thing today, and they became the custodians of that sacred shrine of Hazrat Ruqayya. Crying for Aba Abdullah, it represents the bond that we have with him. It distances, reduces the distance between us and him. And amazing rewards have been mentioned for crying for Aba Abdullah. The Ma'asumeen says that the first benefit you would see for this azar, for this crying, for this grief, for these tears that are shed, it's something which you will see in the grave. says in the hereafter, it's that first spot when all these blessings will be granted to you. Says one who cries himself, or makes others cry, or resembles those who cry, wajabat lahul jannah, the paradise will be made mandatory for him. The Maqatil, they say that Imam Sajjad, he cried for 40 years for Abu Abdullah, that is from the day of Ashura until he passed away. Says his khadim that I come to the Imam when I see him crying all the time, that Imam, is it not time that you stop crying now? It's enough, you've cried for 40 years. In reply, Imam says that Prophet Yaqub was among the prophets to whom 12 sons were given, and just one of them went missing. He cried so much that he lost his sight, and that son was given back to him later on. Says, I with my own eyes saw my father die on the day of Ashura. I saw my brothers perish on the day of Ashura. 17 members, immediate members of my household, they all perished on that one day. And you want me to not cry? The reporter says that I come to the Imam, that is the fourth Imam, and I ask him that, Imam, out of all these afflictions which you saw, these balaya which unfolded upon you, day of Ashura, the 10 days before that, and the days after that, which one was the toughest, which one was the worst? In reply, he says, Ash-Sham, Sham, and Sham, that Sham was the toughest exam to give. Now, there are many things which unfold over here in Sham. One of them is this young toddler of Abu Abdullah, 3 or 4 years of age. She resembles the most to Hazrat Zahra. Name also is the same. Looks also the same. It was as such that when Ahlul Bayt were reminded of Hazrat Zahra, they used to come and see this little toddler of Abu Abdullah. And it was as such that Imam, that is Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, was the father and the mother for this young toddler, because the mother had died when she was born. So the bond which existed between the father and the daughter was strong. She sleeps with the father, she is comforted by the father. And when they are brought to the ruins of Sham, now those of you who have been to Sham, the place of burial of Ruqayya alayha salam and that palace of that mal'oon, there is not much of a distance. And the ruins of Sham, the Urafa, they say that even today they can hear the cries of those children, of those women who used to cry over there. So Sham, it is like that, that grief and sorrow rules over that place, especially in those ruins, and in particular the shrine of Hazrat Ruqayya. Says that one night in these ruins, Hazrat Ruqayya, who was asleep, she wakes up crying that, I just saw my father, where is he? Upon seeing her cry, all the other children, they start crying with Ruqayya. Yazid la'anatullah alayh, who was asleep there, he says, what is all this mess? Why is everyone crying? The information is given to him that Ruqayya, the daughter of Abu Abdullah, she wants to see her father. Says, take the head to the baby, to the child. That head is brought to Ruqayya, and she, upon seeing the head of the father, she sighs. Some reports say that she faints there and then. And the talk that she has with that head is that, says, Abata, man alladhi qata'a waridak? My father, who is it who cut these, who severed these veins of your head? Abata, man alladhi aytamani? Father, tell me, who is going to look after me after you? She says these words, and after a while there is a pin drop silence, and nothing is heard from her. And when they come and find that she has passed away. Now this ghassala, this woman who washes Ruqayya, she was washing her. Now again, this is something which resembles her grandmother. She was also wounded, her arm, her ribs were crushed. The same thing was with Ruqayya. The blisters that were on her body. She was wounded so much that the clothes, they were stuck to her skin. This Ghassala, she says that, was this girl afflicted with some disease? She steps back. Ana la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّمٌ قَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ اللهم لعن أول ظالم ظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر تابع له على ذلك اللهم لعن العصابة التي جاهدت الحسين وشايعت وبايعت وتابعت على قتله اللهم لعنهم جميعا إلهي بحق الزهراء وأبيها وبعلها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها يا الله 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 اللهم عرفني نفسك إنك إن لم تعرفني نفسك لم أعرف رسولك اللهم عرفني رسولك إنك إن لم تعرفني رسولك لم أعرف حجتك اللهم عرفني حجتك إنك إن لم تعرفني حجتك ظللت عن ديني اللهم عجل في فرج مولانا صاحب الزمان ماتم حسين